Hi there, this is Julian Gioiello with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And here hosting with me in the studio is Ben Starr.
Hey Julian, good to be back.
And also in the studio with us today is Dr. Adele Ryan McDowell.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise, actually.
Yeah. It's great to have you here, Adele. Interestingly enough, Armand invited Adele to be on today's program a few months ago.
Correct.
Yeah. And we didn't know that Adele was scheduled to be here, but she showed up, and we're happy to have her here. And if Armand wanted to have her here, we figured, you know, she must have had some interesting things to tell us. So.
Yeah, and she actually happens to know a lot about what we want to talk about today. But yesterday we actually talked about escapism, the value in it, the danger of it, but many people also brought up the positive side of distraction, how it can stimulate creativity or perhaps keep you from destructive tendencies. And what came to mind for us is this idea of slowing down. I know that I'm always running place to place, from whether it's from my job to the train, to my house, to picking up groceries, to running errands. I'm constantly doing something, keeping myself busy, keeping my schedule busy, and I don't necessarily give myself that much time to really take a break. And I know a lot of people live like this in New York City. The pace is high speed, busy, and if you're not, you feel like you're not being productive enough. You feel like you're missing out. You feel like you're perhaps... not being as productive as you should be to reach that goal that you want to get to in your work life or in your career or as an artist, perhaps.
I completely relate to everything you just said, especially here in New York. The pace of life is just so frenetic. I mean, it's a constant grind, and we're constantly moving from place to place. The city, as they say, never sleeps, is constantly in motion, and sometimes I think it's important for us to slow down and appreciate and take in some of the smaller pleasures, simpler pleasures in life that can get us to maybe a more peaceful, meditative state of mind. What do you think, Adele?
Well, I would agree, Ben. I also think people are embarrassed to say they have nothing to do, that they've slowed down or they're between things. It makes them feel like they're a slouch or they're lazy. Maybe that goes back to our Calvinistic underpinnings. I'm not quite sure. And in New York City in particular, you look at the financial world, race, 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 hurry, hurry, hurry. And you could even say there's an addiction to this busyness, an addiction to speed. They looked at people who suffered depression and people who had more serotonin and needed more serotonin. They like, oh, let me go on the spa vacation, let me be on the beach. But the people with the dopamine said, let me have the extreme sports. That's what I want. Drop me off on a helicopter on the top of the mountain, and if I make it, I'm great. That's my kind of vacation. Right.
Yeah.
So, but if we're going for a life with balance, then we need the relaxation as well as the busyness, and we need that balance, right?
Absolutely. I mean, one thing that I recall that I was just talking to Julian about was one of the more meditative experiences of my life was several summers ago. I traveled with a few friends, a fairly decent group of friends. It was about 10 or 12 people. We went out to Pennsylvania to a national park for a weekend in the summer. And we spent the weekend out there cooking on a fire, sleeping under the stars, swimming in a creek. It was fantastic. No cell phones, no media, no television, no computer. And my memory of that trip is, as great as the trip was, my most profound memory was coming back into the city and driving over the Triborough Bridge and looking off to my right and seeing Manhattan and coming over the bridge and getting off the bridge and driving through Astoria into an area that I had been just 3 or 4 days before, but it was completely different. It had completely changed. And really, it didn't change in 3 or 4 days. I had changed.
And that's also what happens when you travel, right? They have signs in London streets, you know, because the traffic goes the opposite way we do here in the U.S. And they have signs everywhere, you know, look where you're walking across the country, look this way, because people would automatically step out and potentially get hurt, right?
Right. So this idea of meditation, As Julian said, you know, sometimes we might think of meditation in a classical sense of maybe the guru or the monk up on the hill. That doesn't necessarily have to be what we mean by meditation, even though that's good and that works for many people. We wanted to go into more of an idea of an everyday meditation that's accessible for everyone.
Right. We all know about this sort of popular concept of meditation, that image of, you know, crossing your legs and being with nature and having your index finger touching your thumb and this sort of, you know, having a mantra or clearing your mind, making it blank. And, you know, this represents something that's really positive and beautiful for a lot of people, but some have tried it and said, I don't know, this doesn't work for me. I keep thinking. I keep, you know, spending all this time and it's uncomfortable and et cetera, et cetera. And we said, well, there are other ways that this happens for people. Maybe you're not meditating by crossing your legs and sitting down in the grass, but perhaps you walk around, you know, in your neighborhood by yourself in the early mornings as the sun comes up and just allow your mind to clear that way. Or perhaps you drink your coffee on your porch and just read the newspaper, but it really allows your brain to take a rest.
Yeah, and that's what we want to discuss today here in the studio with Julian and Dr. Adele Ryan McDowell. Thanks again for joining us. And we will be taking your calls here in a little bit. We want to hear from our listeners, what are your techniques? What are your methods? How do you slow down? How do you get into a more of a peaceful mindset? What is it that you do? And maybe you do meditate in that traditional sense that Julian just mentioned, but If you have your own ways, like Julian and I were discussing, one thing that are both of our fathers have in common is that they like to draw.
Right. I mean, I know my father makes sure that it's a ritual for him to draw one drawing every day. And he spends, you know, an hour or whatever time it takes to draw whatever he's feeling. And that allows him to sort of just let his mind go blank and just focus on one thing and let that energy sort of flow into that drawing. And I know for him that's a very meditative experience.
Interestingly enough, Julian, your dad showed me one of his drawings, and I have to say it is eerily reminiscent of some of the designs that my dad does, which is really strange and funny to me. But yeah, I mean, everyone has their own ways. Adele, how do you bring yourself down to a more calm level? I mean, do you have traditional meditation techniques? Do you have sort of everyday simpler techniques? How do you go about it?
I'm a little simpler. I have taught meditation for a number of years, but I do it through guided meditation because I'm one of those people who my mind goes on a mission, right? So I need the anchor points of a guided meditation to say, okay, now you're going here. Now you're seeing this. What do you see there? And that invokes my imagination, and that calms me and moves me into another place. And I have specific meditations for specific purposes. But I also find, for me, walking where there are trees, that's the kind of thing that I realize I'm part of everything here, and nothing is so big. Because what does meditation do? But it expands us, right? It expands our thinking. It expands our heart. It connects us. I think the idea is, for me, it's about oneness, that we're not so alone and we're connecting with something larger than ourselves and reminding ourselves that we have that potentiality too.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And I'd love to actually, I found an article in the Scientific American, and I'd love to read an excerpt of it to you. It's by Ferris Jaber. Hopefully that's how it's pronounced. And it's called Why Your Brain Needs More Downtime. And it starts off like this. Every now and then, during the work week, usually around 3 in the afternoon, a familiar ache begins to saturate my forehead and pool in my temples. The glare of my computer screen appears to suddenly intensify. My eyes trace the contour of the same sentence 2 or 3 times, yet I fail to extract its meaning. Even if I began the day undaunted, getting through my ever-growing list of stories to write and edit, emails to send and respond to, and documents to read now seems as futile as scaling a mountain that continuously thrusts new stone skyward. There is so much more to do, so much work I genuinely enjoy, but my brain is telling me to stop. It's full. It needs some downtime. Freelance writer and meditation teacher Michael Taft has experienced his own version of cerebral congestion. Cerebral congestion, very exciting word. Two exciting words. In a normal working day in modern America, there's a sense of so much coming you at once. So much to process that you just can't deal with it all, Taft says. In 2011, while finalizing plans to move from Los Angeles to San Francisco, he decided to take an especially long recess from work and the usual frenzy of life. After selling his home and packing all his belongings in storage, he traveled to the small rural community of Barre, Massachusetts, about 100 kilometers west of Boston, where every year people congregate for a three-month-long, quote-unquote, meditation marathon. Taft had been on similar retreats before, but never one this long. For 92 days, he lived at Insight Meditation Society's Forest Refuge facility, never speaking a word to anyone else. He spent most of his time meditating, practicing yoga, and walking through fields and along trails in surrounding farmland and woods, where he encountered rafters of turkeys leaping from branches and once spotted an otter gambolling in a swamp. Gradually, his mind seemed to sort through a backlog of unprocessed data and to empty itself of accumulated concerns. When you go through a long retreat like that, there's a kind of base level of mental tension and busyness that totally evaporates, Taft says. I call that my mind being not full. Currently, the speed of life doesn't allow enough interstitial time for things to just kind of settle down. And many people in the U.S. and other industrialized countries would wholeheartedly agree with Taft's sentiments, even if they're not as committed to meditation. And so, you know, this is a 92-day thing for him. But for those that don't get to experience this, how does this sort of experience show up in your lives? And we would love to hear from you at 212-757-5555. 212-757-5555 is our number. And just sort of hear about the way that meditation sort of manifests itself in your life, and what or how you wish it would, or if you know what your thoughts are on this.
You know, Julian, I love what you said, that piece from the article about the mind not being full. And yesterday we talked about escapism and how certain forms of escapism people may use to sort of shut off the noise in their mind. And so this is the other side of that. And Adele, I also, when you were talking about walking amongst trees, I definitely connected with that as well. For me, it's the water. And I don't know if it's because I'm a Pisces or because I spent my whole life growing up in the New York area, or maybe because my ancestors were like fishermen and pirates and naval officers. But yeah, for me, it's the water. And I actually spent 2 years living in the Midwest. There's the only time in my life I lived outside of New York, and there was always this strange feeling, and it took me a long time to identify, but it was being so far from water.
I understand what you mean. I love water as well. I'm from the great state of Texas, so we didn't have a lot of water where I was growing up. So it took some travel and being up here. But trees, water, nature, the moon, you know, you talk to all of it, and it's there. Vis-a-vis what Julian was saying, there's an apocryphal tale that the amount of information that we get every 5 minutes, the sensory overload, is equivalent to the entire body of knowledge during the Renaissance.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, we were just talking yesterday about this sort of sensory overload that you mentioned, and Julian quoted some statistic that said just taking a simple train ride within New York City, you're bombarded with, I don't know how many thousands of advertisements.
It was 7,000.
In just a short subway ride.
Right, in a subway ride and on a walk to the subway and to your building of work in New York City, you see that many. Up to that many advertisements on your way to and from work.
I mean, absolutely everywhere, you know, even just on a car, the dealer plate on the back of the car is an advertisement.
And actually, speaking of noise, we've heard a couple people saying that we're getting some hiss on the radio. So thank you for bearing with us. We're going to try to figure out what that is exactly. I'm not sure. We're not hearing it on our end, but we will find out hopefully during the break. And just bear with us. As we deal with this, but thank you.
But we also still want to hear from you, the listeners, about how you go about shutting off that noise in your head, and if you have simple techniques or little rituals or traditions that you like to do that get you into that more relaxed, calm, positive place So again, you can reach us here at 212-757-5555.
Yep, 212-757-5555. And just to continue on this article, to summarize, Americans and their brains are preoccupied with work much of the time. Throughout history, people have intuited that such puritanical devotion to perpetual busyness does not in fact translate to greater productivity and is not particularly healthy. What if the brain requires substantial downtime to remain industrious and generate its most innovative ideas? Idleness is not just a vacation, an indulgence, or a vice. It is as indispensable to the brain as vitamin D is to the body, and deprived of it, we suffer a mental affliction as disfiguring as rickets, essayist Tim Kreider wrote in the New York Times. And that's, I think, just really, you know, potent to hear.
And may I add, even those frisky researchers at Harvard have told us that if you have a minimum of 15 to 20 minutes of quiet time a day, it will make a difference in your life. I just read an article, I think it was in the New York Times, about Ina Garten, the barefoot contessa who was the big cook. And she was between careers and didn't know what to do. And so she said, I'm doing nothing. I'm taking a year. And during that year, she said, I'm just going to write a cookbook for myself. It's no big deal. Well, she ended up doing the cookbook and it became a bestseller. But she said that year where she did not work was the best year of her entire life and her most creative.
Wow. And it's just insane that you had said earlier in the show, I mean, how people feel this shame around that, saying I'm not doing anything. And yet here a woman takes a year for herself and it's turns out to be the most productive and creative year of her life.
Absolutely. And I think it's very hard for people to say, I'm going to take time. I'm going to take the walk. I'm going to the beach. I need an afternoon to myself. What I call mental health days, right? You need to plug them in.
Sure. We have a caller on the line. Dennis, thanks for calling us up today. How are you?
Hi. Good afternoon, everybody. And I just want to reflect on my passing real quickly. I've been listening for about 15, 20 years. I'm in my late 40s and had an opportunity to meet with him and he obviously changed my life and been a fan of Gary Noel, the whole club and everything. Been on the search my whole life for inner peace and... just helping people, helping myself, but I need mental health breaks multiple times during the day. And I sometimes feel selfish by that, but I know that when I'm recharged and better, it helps everybody, including myself. I take naps. I live out on Long Island, so I do a lot of yard work and planting and... I just love getting dirty and sweaty. And
you know, Dennis, it's funny that you say that because I've found incredible solace in just that kind of work that you're talking about. Working outside, things like raking leaves and shoveling snow are incredibly meditative to me.
Yeah, and I'm lucky I get to make a little bit of side money from it. It's not my primary job, but in the past, in my 20s and 30s, I was a commercial landscaper, so now I pick and choose my jobs, but... yesterday and today were brutal. I mean, I lost 2 pounds in the sweat, and I was nauseous last night, and I was so happy. I was exhausted. I told my girlfriend, I'm going to bed. I'm zoned out, and it was a great day. But, yeah, nature and does it for me, and naps. Nature, naps, music, you know, but when, you got to know when you got to pull the plug. You know, you got to know when to say when, but... through trial and error.
Real quick, Dennis, you mentioned naps. How else do you sort of unplug, if you will? How else do you get back to that calm space?
As far with a nap?
Yeah, I mean, besides that.
Daily. Something daily for myself. Yes, every day.
So, I mean, just specifically, though, if you could, because you mentioned naps as one of the ways you do it. I mean, how else do you do it? You mentioned mental health breaks throughout the day.
Oh, right. Again, breathing. I'm lucky enough to work in a gym, so I get to exercise. So I mix it up. I'm creative. I go from physical weights to pulling weeds to swimming in the water. It's been a while to figure out my own path, but that's how I do it. Just multiple things. Little on, little off, little give, little take. I help.
And like you said, finding peace and meditation through the actual work itself can be a powerful thing, too.
Yes, exactly. The meditative part, when I'm running, when I'm swimming. When you're swimming in water on Long Island, there's nothing else to think about except turning the head and breathing. It's actually very peaceful.
Well, Dennis, thanks so much for the call, and maybe we'll see you this summer out at Jones Beach.
Yeah, God bless, and all my love to the family.
Thank you.
All right.
212-757-5555. Thanks again to everyone who's calling in, reporting a strange noise quality issue. We don't know what's causing it, but we are working to fix it as quickly as possible, working with our engineers at WBAI and here in the studio. I'm joined here by Dr. Adele Ryan McDowell. Again, Dr. McDowell was invited on the program by Armand several months ago, and we are happy to have her on, talking about everyday meditation and simple ways to relax and find a balance. So thanks again for being here.
Oh, thank you, Ben, for having me. One thing I think it's interesting to think about in terms of taking time, it's a way we can feed our soul and our lives can be less robotic. And I think when we take the time, we increase our creativity. And some of the ways, though, you can listen to great music, right? You can listen to music, and that holds you, right? Takes you someplace else. It transports you. You can look at a piece of art, or as you were talking about, Julian, with your dad drawing. I give an assignment. I'm a psychologist, and I give an assignment, which is to draw every day as a discipline a mandala, which would be a circle. Take like a cereal bowl, right? And I liked using watercolor pencils because I'm not much of an artist, but then I can wet my finger and smear it all, and it gives it some kind of look. But it's a great. And if you're going through something like a recovery or an illness or whatever, you could chart your progress every day just by what the unconscious mind pulls up and puts on the paper.
That's great. Actually, we would make our own mandalas every New Year's in my family.
Oh,
yeah.
Fun!
We would make our own on paper plates.
Oh, that's great.
Actually, we've got Belle here on the line. Belle, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Belle.
Hi.
Yes, this is actually my aunt and Armand's sister, Belle, who's also a doctor and psych. You can introduce yourself, Belle.
Yeah, I am. It's a pleasure to hear you guys all carrying on the positive mind, carrying on Armand's work. It's wonderful to hear, and I'm so proud of you, and I know Armand would be thrilled about the work. I was hearing the topic, and I thought I wanted to make my contribution to it and to how I got into meditation and spirituality, such an important dimension.
Oh, great. So do you would you say you would do the popular form of meditation, or do you find yourself meditating through other means?
I was taught... This is the title of my book that I'm not going to write, but it's the title. I always find time... always being able to write titles and then have trouble putting something in between. So the title of the book is Everything I Ever Learned About Spirituality, I Learned It From My Cat. And it was my Gushy, that was the name of my cat, when I realized that she was more mortal, that she was going to die. She was 15 years old. She still had more years to go. That I realized she was going to go, that I wanted to give her attention, that I wanted to spend every moment with her, whenever she was around, that I would be with her. And she wasn't a loving cat. She's not like Cato and your cat Julian, but she was so beautiful and so entitled and so regal. And when she was around, I would give her all of my attention, and in doing that, she taught me how to be in the moment, how to clear my mind and just really be with her.
So by putting your attention towards this cat, in this case, that you loved so much, you were able to find a way to be more present.
Totally. It was amazing. It was amazing what I experienced and learned. And this was many years ago, and then I started transferring that to everyone else I was with and to every place I went. And then because I'd had also an accident and I couldn't afford any longer to have my mind distracted, that I had to pay attention to wherever I was and whatever I was doing, that the mindfulness that I'd worked on all my life, knowing having that as an objective, just blossomed and increased, starting from Gushy, so that the system, for me, becomes really staying in the moment.
No, and that was a huge lesson that you know, Armand believed in too, and I know a lot of the listeners here listening to the Positive Mind right now have found that through you know, various ways, such as, you know, for example, having that kind of connection with an animal in your life, and or a person, or a place, and there's these. They all kind of. It's really great hearing the sort of unique experience that you've had, and how that translated to the ability to become more present. And
You know, Armand and I were young. We would have staring contests just as a joke. When we were kids, we would do staring contests. Did you ever do that?
Oh, great! I mean, I remember he used to tell me that something really beautiful happened if you stared at yourself with a candle melting. And but I've never done a staring contest directly with him. I can imagine it was quite intense.
When we were kids, it was a joke that we would just stare at each other to see who would blink. But then when we got older and we would get together, we would say, "Let's stare," and it became looking into each other's eyes deeply. And not blinking, but it became a very deep meditation into each other that he and I could both do with each other, with other people, with our patients. And it became this transfixed meditative state, but very intimate, close, that it was transferred to other things and even space. And so I originated it from my cat, but it is a very beautiful concentration and meditation and mindfulness. So I wanted to call and offer that, and also to say again, you guys are carrying him on, and it's very moving for me to hear it and to hear you all. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Bill,
you, Bill,
for calling. That's
Dan, you're doing beautifully.
Thank
I always
you.
Tell Julian, but I haven't gotten to tell you yet.
No, thank you so much, Bill.
I'm so proud of you.
I know it's amazing what you said about Armand's gaze, because he did have such a powerful gaze and look.
Yeah, yeah. I'm his youngest sister, but believe me, it taught me a lot. It got me strong. So we'll see you again.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Bill. And we're coming to our break. Hopefully we'll be able to figure out this hissing noise that you're hearing, but if you can bear with us, we really appreciate it. And we'll also be putting this program online if you want to listen to it. There is no hiss on that on that recording, but we'll definitely figure this out. And we're going to bring you a little bit of music that, again, we're going to continue bringing you music from Armand's library of music, and as you all know, a really eclectic and beautiful group, bunch of music. We consider it the vault. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. I'm Julian Joiello in the studio with Ben Starr and also Dr. Adele Ryan McDowell. Stay tuned.
You got a accent, but you ain't the positive. Eliminate the negative and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with this turn in between. You gotta spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith. All pandemonium's liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark,
Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark? Man, they said we got an accent. Accentuate positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In-Between. Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark? Man, they said we gotta accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
And I know we only heard a little bit of that song, but that was Accentuate the Positive by Johnny Mercer and the Paul Smith Trio. And you've probably actually heard Armand has a version of this song sang by Clint Eastwood, which he always liked to bring out. But we'll play that for you guys sometime in the future. Hopefully that hiss has, we tried reconnecting and we're hoping that this has been figured out. Thank you, Reggie, for helping us out on that end. And going forward for the next half hour, we hope to bring you the highest quality radio. So thank you very much for staying tuned. And, you know, a quick announcement after the break. Make sure to donate to WBAI if you can. Become a BAI buddy by going to the website and clicking BAI buddy. And, you know, donating using your credit card, doing a recurring donation, and becoming a member of the station, which is a great way to be a part of this community, which is all publicly supported.
Yeah, listener-sponsored radio, and Pacifica Network was the first listener-sponsored radio, and let's keep it going, and let's keep bringing you programming like The Positive Mind and the many others that we all are getting to hear on WBAI. So that's WBAI.org, and in the top right corner of the screen, you click WBAI Buddy.
Yeah, so we're still taking callers for this next half of the hour. We'd love to hear from you and hear about the way you find ways to clear your mind and maybe perhaps meditate in your own way. So 212-757-5555, 212-757-5555 is our number. Please call in. We'd love to hear from you. And we're going to keep talking about this because we think it's a great topic. I mean, it's not just something that exists only in the basic form of meditation, as we've said, you know?
Right. And I think day-to-day life, like we said, and then like we discussed, Adele, especially in a city like New York here, where everything is packed and frenetic and busy and constantly in motion, it gets very easy to sort of lose sight. You know, we start taking things for granted, little things.
Absolutely.
And I think it gets very easy to overlook those things. You know, it's not until we're real sick. For example, I had a very bad cold a couple months ago, and I had a terrible sore throat, and, you know, my nose was congested, my sinuses. And I said to myself, when I feel healthy, I'm going to be so grateful to feel healthy. And I think that's a good example of, on a small scale, of how we just start to take things for granted and how slowing down to appreciate those things is very important.
I totally agree. Marty Seligman, who is known as a cognitive behavioral therapist, and I think it's in his book Flourish, he has an assignment that he suggests before you go to bed, you think to yourself of three things that you're grateful for, right? You know, cognitive therapy is your mind, what you think influences how you feel, right? So when we're in a grateful place, we're more open, we're more expansive, we're more open-hearted, we're not taking for granted. But it's hard. Life is full and busy, and we're never all going to get it done. I say that to you as much as I say it to myself. We're never going to get it all done, right? And so we have to be gentle with ourselves and find out ways to feed our souls and be kind to ourselves. I think of that Dunkin' Donuts commercial, time to make the donuts, you know, kind of the robotic life. Here I go. How many times do you get up in the morning and think, oh, geez, what do I have to do today? And there's no joy or excitement or anticipation. It's, oh, I've got to do this. So if we stop and we start appreciating our lives and appreciating those around us and our experiences and maybe the way the moon looks beyond the scrim of trees or the sound of rain on a window, or if you have a goofy dog, right, or a funny cat or whatever it is, the things that light us up, that animates us, that feeds our soul. And I think in today's very fast world, that's what we need.
Now, the trouble is, though, Adele, is that those things are always there. Right?
True.
Those things are always there, and what we have to do, the challenge for us, is to slow down enough to just appreciate them and to take it in.
That's right. And not feel guilty about it. Say, hey, this is good mental health. This is good emotional health. Right? We talk about IQ. Well, there's EQ, emotional quotient. Right? And we need that. And that, you're right. You're so right, Ben. We have to think about slowing down, being mindful.
Okay. And I think we have a caller on the line. We want to say hi to and hear your strategies for slowing down and appreciating. Johanna, are you with us?
Hi, yes. Hey, thank you for your show. I've been a listener for a while and I'm a supporter. I have two points I'd like to make. One is something we used to hear a lot about in life, and that is balance. And balance gives me it makes me happy. Like if you devote, like, life is not all about a single pursuit. We have all these different levels, and when we have more balance in our life, then it, like, if we devote some effort to work, some for physical, some for mental, it's all of these things. And when any of those things are out of alignment, then it gives us stress. But when we try to get balance in our lives, that in itself reduces stress because we're covering, like, all of the areas at least a little bit, you know?
Yeah. How do you find balance, Johanna?
As a Sagittarius, I have a little bit of, I have a single vision. And so I do one thing, and then once I've made a certain accomplishment, then I would, like, move on to, like, something else. And don't allow all of my time to be consumed by a single pursuit, I guess,
Johanna, that is really great. Julia Cameron wrote a book called The Artist's Way, and one of the exercises in the book is we have the circle, and you draw the percentages, like a pie chart, of how much time you spend doing things, right? And so what I'm hearing you say is very wonderful. I do this, and then I can take a break, and I can do something else. And you give yourself variety. Like, we're all supposed to eat lots of green and multicolored veggies and fruits. Well, you're doing this with your activities.
Definitely. And then the other thing I'd like to mention is something which I absolutely never hear anybody ever talk about, but I found it true to be in my personal life, is that there's ecstasy in hard physical work. When you do hard physical work, your body produces endorphins in a similar way as, let's say, the runner's high. But you can do this with your own anything. Like, if you are not happy with your apartment, if you put effort into painting your apartment or doing, let's say, wall repair on a hot day and you sweat, that can give you, get your endorphins in. And when you get those endorphins in, it makes you feel good.
Absolutely. Johanna, you know, we were just talking to Dennis, a caller a little bit earlier, who mentioned that as well, that hard physical labor can actually be meditative in and of itself, and I've definitely been there myself, so I couldn't agree with you more.
Okay, I'm going to sign off. I'm driving. I'm going into a tunnel. Thank you all. Goodbye.
Okay, drive safe.
Thank you so much. Thank you for that.
212-757-5555. Yeah, it's true. Physical labor, working hard, breaking a sweat, you know, whether it's actual labor or even if it's in the gym working out, there is a sort of tranquility and peace about that.
There's also a sense of accomplishment that you've actually done X, and you can see so much in today's world. We don't feel like it ends, right? We don't feel like it ends. We, you know, you think, oh, work, I've got to do this, and you never quite close the door on it. So this, with physical activity, like you're painting a room or redoing it, you feel like you've done that. So not only do you feel good because you've stretched out your body, right, and energetically, and you have to be in your body to do physical stuff too, which again makes you mindful.
Yeah, back in high school, I actually worked in a factory. I did assembly, putting together components, and I would have all the parts that I needed to build the finished product on my left-hand side.
Okay.
And then I would bring them into the middle.
Okay.
And I would build the part and the component, and then I would stack them on my right. And that was a great feeling, to watch the stack on the left grow smaller and to watch the stack on the right grow larger right. as the day went on. I mean, there's something to be said for real, you know, physical accomplishment that we can see.
Absolutely.
Not just shuffling papers around, you know, on a desk, which I've done that too.
Yeah, but the intangible versus the tangible, it does feel better when you can actually see it.
Sure. We're going to take another call. Carol, you're on the line. Nice to hear
Hello.
From you. Hi there,
Hi,
Carol.
Guys.
Thanks for calling in. We're talking about meditation and slowing down. How have you done that, Carol?
Excellent show as usual. So my question is, how do we, I'm a moody person. So I go by bamboo. Some days I get up energized, ready to take on the world. Some days I just feel like going into a cave and disappearing. But there's a part of me when I have the cave mood, there's a guilt that is associated with it.
A guilt?
A feeling of guilt. Like, you know,
But there's some kind of comfort there too, isn't there?
There is. I need to do it. But, you know, the feeling that says that you should always be doing something. And the I should be doing this, and the guilt. And in another related thing, I heard someone once say that the word should be removed from the vocabulary.
Yeah, it's a tough word.
It puts so much of a stress on you. How do we, my question is, how do you deal with what your natural tendency is, the feeling to take on the world versus the feeling to just go inward? And the guilt that's associated with going inward, where you feel that, no, you should not go inward. You should be doing this. My question is, how do you balance that?
Well,
how,
Carol, you know, I think it's like you said, balance is important. And there's some days where I feel like you know, I want to be in my cave. I want to have a caveman day once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, and as long as it's not every day, mm-hmm. like our last caller, Johanna, mentioned balance. There are days where, you know, I want to retreat into a cave, so to speak. And
yes.
I don't think that that's necessarily wrong or unhealthy.
Right. And
that's it. It's not. But we have been socialized and to feel that it is, that if you're not constantly up and about and doing, that you're not being productive. And that stress and that feeling of guilt actually makes the situation worse, you know. How do we just deal with how we are feeling at the time? It's a balance, right?
Well, it is a balance, Carol, you're right. But also, I could suggest a reframe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the reframe is, how do I feel today? What does my heart need and want? And
yeah.
If you need what I would call a soul day, or a cave day or whatever
mm-hmm.
it is, you give yourself permission. And if the cave days outweigh the non-cave days, Well, you might want to look to see if there's something else that needs to bridge that. And I would,
okay.
I'd also suggest, do you know the idea of anchor points? And by anchor points, I mean that we have a couple of things that we do every day. I'm not saying they have to take a long time. But you know, for example, every day you'll move your body for 20 minutes. I don't care if you're dancing in the living room to the oldies. It doesn't matter.
Or,
right? And then every day, you know, some people might need, they might need to a little prayer time, or they might need a little quiet time. And you set your kitchen timer and you give yourself 15 minutes of that. And, you know, a couple little things that you promise yourself that are going to be part of your day that just anchor you, and they help the days, knit the days together in an easier way.
Okay, the anchor points. Wonderful. Okay. Well,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure if Armand were here, he would say, make sure to dance.
Oh,
make
fabulous.
Sure
oh,
to
that,
dance.
That is one of my anchor points.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I know... We actually, he got a drum set in his house because he was feeling at home. He wanted to do something physical, but it became, you know, increasingly difficult. And he said the best way to exercise would be if I got a drum set, because I used to play drums when I was younger. If I can play drums just for 20 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. And I actually had the opportunity to watch Armand play drums, and it was quite fun.
Fabulous.
And
like Madonna... One of the verses from her song says, only when I'm dancing do I feel this free.
Fantastic.
And that is me. It's when I'm dancing and singing that I really feel free, and that is what I do. That's an anchor point for me, so I really should do that every day.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, you know, get yourself a nice stereo, some big speakers, and...
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you again, Carol, for listening and calling
in. I'm just proud of you.
Thank you, Carol. It's always nice to hear from you.
Take care.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. We're talking about meditation, slowing down, and being a caveman. Cave days.
Cave days, mental health days, nightgown days, whatever you want to call them.
Sure, sure. It's important, and I think, like you said, Adele, it's you have to start thinking about it when the cave days outweigh the non-cave days. I love that Carol coined this kind of new term, but it makes so much sense to
me. It does, absolutely. And you do. If you find out that you're hiding from the world or pulling back more than usual, then you might think, well, let me make a bridge into the world. Let me slowly poke my head out. You know, sometimes it's we have turtle time, right? We hunker down, we're in our shell, we're protecting ourselves, because sometimes life is too much. But if it gets to be too much, then you got to poke your head out and enjoy the world a little bit more.
Absolutely. Some music for me also is a real big one. And I've never been big on going out clubbing and dancing, but I love to dance. I just I do it in my own home.
Me too.
To all kinds of music. All kinds of music. And there is something really nice and liberating about it. We're going to try to get a few more calls in, if we can, before the end of the program. We have Megan on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I stepped away from the radio for about 10 minutes, and I wasn't sure what can you do, or if you can suggest anything, when you can't shut your mind off, when you're just so, whether it's, you're just stuck at being so busy. There are a lot of things that I want to change with work and whatnot, and just being stuck in that same monotonous routine and just being bombarded left and right of the same things that you're used to doing. Are there any suggestions you can give that would, you know, I know yoga, meditation, I've done all that in the past, and it feels great. I feel the benefits, but then it's just being stuck in that monotony of the day-to-day things. And then your health does.
Where do you live,
fail.
Megan?
I'm in New Jersey.
In New Jersey? Are you close to the city?
I'm sorry?
You close to the city?
Yeah, that's just 10 minutes away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would say to break the monotony, go somewhere new. Go somewhere in the city you've never been, or go the other way. Go out towards the Pennsylvania border. It's nice and nice and green out there. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I would suggest, I'm hearing that you have a very overactive mind, right? Well, we have an overactive...
overactive mind, and then the body follows, just keeping busy, being busy, and there's no time to sit and say, what do I want to do? Like, I fall back in the wintertime, and Ormond was gracious enough to kind of coax it gently out of me to sing on the air.
Oh, how lovely. Will you do that again today?
I would like to pursue, like, sing songwriting, and that is just something that's on the back burner because I'm stuck kind of in the rut of what I do now for work and wanting to change but just not knowing how to get those steps going.
All right. Well, Megan, before you sign off, I would like you to sing a little something for us. But here's the other thing, okay? A couple of things. I can relate. You talk very fast. Your life is very full. I would ask you to practice walking a little more slowly, talking a little more slowly. If you are someone who's open to journaling, if you can journal, it is one of the best tools for self-discovery and giving yourself a little bit of time. If you don't feed your dream, your seed, every day, give it 15 minutes, then it's going to be poof gone, and you're going to be so disappointed. So feed it every day for 15 minutes, and sing us, belt out a little phrase or something for us right now, Megan. Come on.
Nothing's coming to mind. I'm actually walking a dog now. I have a dog walking business, so we're actually walking in this 90-degree heat. So next time I'll
oh, okay. All right. I put you on the spot. I'm sorry, but okay. I was excited. But listen, Megan, feed your dream every day, 15 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Another right. thing that was really one more thing, Megan, I really connect with you on that sense of always kind of being on the run and being busy and filling that schedule up every day. And I know when we used to talk about the Enneagram a lot with Armand, that's the 7 type, this busy, fun-loving, quick, spontaneous, work-oriented, very filling that schedule. And I remember a huge piece of advice that really struck me and really helped me out was we never give ourselves enough travel time between things in our schedule. So, like, I know I find myself, I'm saying, I can get there in 20 minutes, so I'm going to give myself 15 minutes because maybe the train will come just on time and everything will, and I'm rushing in between. I never have a moment to sort of enjoy that time in between places. And I remember it said, just double that amount of travel time. Give yourself that time so that when you leave, you're not rushing. When you get there, you're not rushing. And then there's this sort of peace that exists in between events and appointments. And that for me, I know it helped me a lot and helped kind of like slow down that pace that sometimes is almost impossible to slow down.
And do you have people that help you along with it, or are you just kind of, it's sometimes hard to just motivate myself. Like, if I had someone that was really pounding it into my head, like, slow down, that would help. But I know that has to come from within. So that's kind of, I guess, more pressure I put on myself, too. But that is great advice, what you mentioned.
No, yeah, I mean, I wanted to share something that really worked for me. And thank you so much for calling in, Megan, and sharing that with us.
Right. Keep up the show. Love the format, how you're keeping it going. So,
yeah, really, really excited to hear you call in one day with a bit of a song to sing
for
us,
you
okay?
Guys and Armand, okay.
All right, thank you so much, Megan.
Okay, take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, I used to be constantly on the rush like that, too. Not that I still don't rush around, but the difference between leaving 5 minutes late and leaving 5 minutes early is enormous. I mean,
it is.
Once I started showing up places 5 minutes early instead of 5 minutes late all the time, it's amazing the impact it has on the whole rest of your life.
Right, and for some people, it might not seem like that big of a deal because they always do that. But for those who are kind of always on time exactly or just a tiny bit late like I am, I find myself getting there at 4:01, you know what I mean, 4:02, and I just made it through the door in the elevator, and it's kind of this rush action movie experience every time I'm getting somewhere. It really, to give yourself that extra 10 minutes is an incredible difference, and it reduces the anxiety, the stress, and gives you a little bit more, you can appreciate that meditative experience that is during that travel time, because travel time can be very meditative.
Oh, absolutely. And even research has proved that if we leave a few minutes early and give ourselves a little wiggle room, you never know. You might have time to have a cup of coffee and you meet the most wonderful person sitting next to you. Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to happen, but you leave a little space so you can take a breath.
Exactly. And so we actually did not leave much space here at the end of the program. It's just reaching the end here. But thank you so much to Dr. Adele Ryan McDowell for coming in today and surprising us. It's been fantastic. And you can also find her at her website, which is her name, AdeleRyanMcDowell.com. And she's got several books that she's written and really, really great stuff. And then, of course, thank you for listening, everybody, and bearing with us with some of our technical difficulties today. So just make sure to find those moments for yourself if you can, even if it's 10 minutes, you know, if you really, you know, in between the, you know, dinner that you have planned right after work, then, you know, if you can get that moment, just let your mind go at ease just for a moment. And if you can do that for yourself this week, perhaps next week we'll come and we'll find some very peaceful people.
And take a moment to send us an email, positivemind@wbai.org.
All right, and take care. Thank you for listening to The Positive Mind.
Mama, don't me you.